Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Famed poet, writer, commentator, activist, and educator. That's what the press release says about Nikki Giovanni. But when you delve into her life and life's work, Nikki clearly is much more than that. She's a person for whom, as far as I'm concerned, the sum of their parts doesn't even come close to the whole. No matter how many awards I could list here on the air, it would never really say it all. She's written 30 books, many poetry. Of course, she's earned many, many awards and honors and honorary degrees. She is one of Oprah Winfrey's 25 living legends. And she's with us today. She's right. She's speaking this week at Ohio Wesleyan University. For more information on that, go to WOSU.org/all sides. But with us right now, Nikki Giovanni. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You're known for speaking your mind, and you do it in a very funny way. But people seem when, as I was listening to you on YouTube for hours, people seem to crave that.
I think people just accept the fact that maybe somebody should say this is what I think, and not always be worried about, well, what's going to happen if I say that. And so I'm not running for office. I don't want anything, you know.
Yeah.
What's the advantage for me not being honest, at least with myself? I'm not, leading a movement. I'm harmless. I'm a poet.
Well, it's funny you mentioned politicians, because I was going to say, you're not checking out, you're not reading the polls every day, the tracking polls on anything.
No, I'm not. And thank God, huh?
Well, people seem to love it, though. Why it makes me wonder why more people don't do it.
I think it's silly. I think that you'd have to do what you believe in. I'm a big fan of, I'm a 60s person.
Mm-hmm.
So my generation was a big fan of let's go out and change the world.
When they're talking about what kids should do when they grow up, and they're asking them, and I always wonder kind of like, well, what's your dream? Like, well, I can't do my dream.
Well, I think you can. I remember reading a long time ago, Anne, about this kid, and it made me crazy. And he was a comic book person, and his mother was always on him about, reading comic books. And he took really, really, really good care of his comic books, and that's really all he cared about. And then he got to be like 20 years old, and he had a first edition of Superman in prime condition and sold it for $100,000. Don't tell me you can't live your dreams.
That's a great example of living your dream.
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, how wonderful was that? And I don't think that he was thinking, I need to save my Superman or Silver Surfer. My son used to love Silver Surfer. I need to save my Silver Surfer comics so that I can one day sell it. What he said was, I love them. And in loving them, not only did other people love it, but he kept it. And he gave it added value. And then if he had never decided to sell it, it would have been a pleasure for him one day to show it to his son or daughter. You see what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I think you have to think like that.
How did you find your path?
I'm being repetitive this morning. I grew up at a time that the nation was in turmoil, because I was born in 43, of course, and one of my earliest memories is going to be the death of Emmett Till in terms of politics.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we got Rosa Parks and the Montgomery bus boycott, and so that was, exciting. I live with my grandparents, and I'm a Tennessean by birth, mm-hmm. but I'm an Ohioan by rearing. And so, I grew up in that busyness, as it were. And, of course, I'm an Eastern Tennessean. We tell stories. I said to someone very recently, fortunately for probably my generation, and certainly for me, we didn't have TV because, mm-hmm. You couldn't get a signal in the mountains. So you still had to talk to each other, and you still told stories. You still sang songs together. And the things that kind of shape your personality and how you how you envision a world and how you speak to it.
And there was a point where you were studying one thing, but you were also taking creative writing classes or creating writing course, writing workshops. It was sort of a sideline at the time.
I didn't think or not think, about being a writer. I mm-hmm. was a history major in college,
mm-hmm.
which I would always recommend for any writer to go away from what you're doing. Because if I had been an English major, for example, which people are, nothing wrong with it, I teach in the English department, but you're already going to do that reading. You're already going to do that criticism. So what you're needing is to make yourself do something that you wouldn't ordinarily do. I'm a big fan of anthropology for the same reason, and science. I'm not that good. You know, I know a little bit about cold fusion and some things like that. But you have to kind of take yourself away because you know you're going to do what you love.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Nikki Giovanni, poet, writer, educator, activist. She'll be at Ohio Wesleyan this week. You can check that out on WOSU.org/allsides. Nikki, I read somewhere about how you believe it's so important for artists to make their work known. They can't keep it to themselves.
Well, I would not make a good Emily Dickinson, if that's what you mean. No, you know, you get out there, and because how else do you know? And, you know, some things work well, some things don't. You know, you have to admit that, too. But, you know, you wouldn't dream to be a singer without going out and singing a song. Why would you want to be a writer without reading to your public?
It's funny you mention Emily Dickinson because I actually thought about her. One of the things I love about your writing are the titles of your poems. They're so direct and speak very clearly to me, and hers often did too. You know, you openly criticize it. When I mentioned that you speak your mind, one of the things you speak about, you know, you're very openly critical of lots of famous people, including some of the most prominent African Americans in the country, and not the least of which is the president. And then Condoleezza Rice, Bill Cosby, Tiger Woods, the latest. How does that play?
It works for me. No, Tiger, of course, I'm a woman, and prostitution is a terrible idea. And no matter how we look at it, the sex trade is not a volunteer trade. You know, people keep saying prostitution is the oldest profession. But if prostitution were a profession, I teach here at Virginia Tech, we would have prostitution 101. Mm. People would be clamoring to get into that class. It's not a profession. It's coercive. And that just because he can play golf doesn't mean that he can. I mean, look at the millions of dollars this young man has spent paying to some man to produce some woman somewhere in the world to do God knows what. And I was extremely disappointed in Barack Obama when he said that Woods betrayed his family. The governor of South Carolina betrayed his family because he fell in love with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
But Tiger Woods is involved in the sex trade, and that's a vicious business. That's the biggest single most horrible thing on earth right now, next to the drug trade. You know, that's why we got little 8 and 9 year old girls being kidnapped, and boys too. And you know, it's a terrible thing that's happening with the sex trade. And to kind of like not be paying attention, you know, Elliot Spitzer recognized. Oh my God, this. And I'm not, you know, Elliot was wrong too because he recognized he's buying women. You know, but at least he had enough sense to resign and step back and say, you know, this is wrong and crazy. But you know, all of that, I'm a sex addict. No. There's something else going on there. And the sex trade is a bad trade, and it should be prosecutable. We occasionally prosecute these streetwalkers, you know, but nobody ever wants to say anything to the Johns.
And you mentioned the drug trade. I mean, they're often not only they're connected.
They are connected. And it's dirty business, no matter how you look at it. So I think that I would be just totally remiss as a voice not to raise my voice against that. You know, I mean, gosh, how can you excuse that? That's not excusable.
But you're right. It is a different take than what most people have taken on the whole issue of Tiger Woods and his infidelity. Is it's about his family,
and
idea of the sex trade is a completely different thing than anyone else has done, really. Well, Condoleezza Rice.
Oh, no, that's, you know, gosh.
That was,
I mean,
so funny.
Just nothing to like there. But
you were talking.
The Bush administration is over.
You're talking about Rosa Parks. I think it was a.
You saw that?
Yeah. I've been on YouTube for the last 24 hours, just cracking up half the time. But so, you know, but when you were criticizing her, people were kind of going, "Whoa!" You're like,
well,
"Whoa!"
You know, Condoleezza deserves some criticism. I mean, she's from Birmingham, Alabama, for God's sake, and. You know, at some point you have to speak up. You only have today. I'm a big, big, big fan of Do Today's Job Today because I grew up in a Baptist church, and my grandmother's Baptist church, Mount Zion Baptist Church, Knoxville, Tennessee. Tomorrow is not given. You have to do today's job today. And I was just really upset. I mean, Condoleezza's like, well, I have this wonderful position. Yeah, baby, but what have you done with it? What have you done that's different from anybody else? How do we know? If you didn't know, if you were blind, And you just said, you know, you had Braille, and you're reading about Secretary of State Rice, right? Mm-hmm. You would have no way of knowing she was a woman or black. Where has your sensibility come in? You see what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying?
Yes.
And so, no, Condoleezza at best was a disappointment, but as I say, she's gone. I think she gives speeches and stuff now.
Yeah.
And that's good because, you know, you have to put bread on the table. I think she probably has a dog or a cat or something, needs shots, you know. So I'm not trying to, you know, destroy the girl. I'm just trying to say, gosh, you know, that was a disappointment.
Yeah, the same thing with Bill Cosby. Now, he's a cultural critic as well,
mm-hmm.
coming from a different point of view.
Yeah, but why are we picking on poor? Why do rich people pick on poor people? You know, I got mad at Michelle, and I never thought I would be mad at Michelle Obama because, you know, you're happy to see her, you know. She's a good-looking kid. And you wish them well. But, you know, to be feed your children well, don't tell me that. You think I want to not feed my kids well? You think I don't want them to have fresh vegetables and fresh fruit? You know, you have to tell that to the people that put grocery stores in the neighborhood. You have to tell that to banks. So that on the days that checks come at the first of the month, which is really crazy, I don't have to go to a check cashing place. I need a green grocer there. You need to tell, you know, the food chains that are killing our children, McDonald's and Burger King and all of the, and I'm not picking on them, but all of that fast food with all of that sugar and salt and craziness. Don't tell me I need to feed my kid because the assumption is somehow what, I don't want to? Of course I do.
It has, you know, when I was listening to your, what I could find, you know, over the years of what you've said, in many ways, your message doesn't really change.
I'm sorry.
The emotion and the passion always feels very much the same.
Well, you know, some things just make you crazy because we're always criticizing the same people. I was upset when Barack was running for, speaking of the president, mm-hmm. for president, and he goes to give that speech, which is about the right wing. We all know that. He goes to give that speech to say, you know, black men have to be better fathers. As if they wake up in the morning to not be. They need jobs. They need neighborhoods that are being attended to. They need we need building codes to be enforced so that people have enough space. Don't just walk in like, oh, you guys just went up. Woke up in the morning, had sex with somebody, the kid comes, and you just don't care. Of course they care. How could you know? How could you think they don't care? How could you think anybody doesn't? People are struggling. And if you look at this economy, we still need jobs. I was amazed that somebody could say, that the president could say, oh, I get it, you want jobs. No, baby, that's why we elected you. We want jobs. And we have an infrastructure that needs fixing. We have an inner city that needs fixing. And Arne Duncan, who is, I think, a disaster, is sitting around making pronouncements on young men leaving college, going to the NBA. I want to know what you're doing for K through
mm-hmm.
six.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you doing for their ability to read and write? What are you doing for their ability to have a hot breakfast and a hot lunch? Don't be that posturing. Oh, you're not graduating Virginia Tech or whatever. You know, we do. But some school, you're not graduating these youngsters. No, that's not your problem. They're grown. Your problem is, where are you at eighth grade? Where were you in South Hadley when a girl is being harassed to death?
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me about some boy going off playing football or basketball. He's an American. He's making money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. Americans want to be rich. He's doing that. That's the American way. Give him a medal. Why don't you do something about South Hadley?
You're listening to Nikki Giovanni, poet, writer, educator, activist, and our guest today on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're going to have to take a short break. When we return, we'll hear from Nikki from about 2 years ago when she spoke at the convocation after the massacre at Virginia Tech. But for now, give us a call if you want to speak with Nikki, 614-292-8513, or you can always email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered.
I think we're really benefiting from that staycation mentality.
At the Columbus Zoo, ranked number one in the nation by One Travel Guide, attendance is up about 30% so far this year.
normally in a downturn economy, zoos and local attractions like zoos do very well.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU news team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us this morning. 54 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1021. Some sunshine today. There is a slight chance of rain and a high of 68. A few clouds tonight and a low of 42. Sunshine for Wednesday and a high of 73.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
We are Virginia Tech. We are sad today, and we will be sad for quite a while. We are not moving on. We are embracing our mourning. We are Virginia Tech. We are strong enough to stand tall tearlessly. We are brave enough to bend to cry and sad enough to know we must laugh again. We are Virginia Tech. We do not understand this tragedy. We know we did nothing to deserve it. But neither does a child in Africa dying of AIDS, neither do the invisible children walking the night away to avoid being captured by a rogue army, neither does the baby elephant watching his community be devastated for ivory, neither does the Mexican child looking for fresh water, neither does the Appalachian infant killed in the middle of the night in his crib, in the home his father built with his own hands, being run over by a boulder because the land was destabilized. No one deserves a tragedy. We are Virginia Tech. The Hokie Nation embraces our own and reaches out with open heart and hands to those who offer their hearts and minds. We are strong and brave and innocent and unafraid. We are better than we think and not quite what we want to be. We are alive to the imagination and the possibility. We will continue to invent the future through our blood and tears, through all this sadness. We are the Hokies. We will prevail. We will prevail. We will prevail. We are Virginia Tech.
That was Nikki Giovanni on April 16, 2007 at the convocation. After the tragedy, after the slaughter at Virginia Tech, Nikki, you know, it stood the test of time like most everything I read of yours and everything. I was as moved listening to it to prepare for the show as I was when I heard it the first time.
Well, you know, that this is only the second time I've heard it. Bill Moyers played it for me, and I just it really catches you up. Obviously, I was incredibly upset, and we all were. And so I think just fortunately, you know, I was asked to anchor a convocation, and I think I had maybe 12 hours. I think that Kay called me like at 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening and said, you know, can you anchor, or we would like for you to anchor. So the answer was yes, of course I will. And, you know, you didn't want to, I lost a student, and it still hurts to think about Matt LaPorte. And so I thought I better write something down because I didn't want to stand up on stage. You know, you get caught up. That's why families don't speak at funerals, because you get caught up, and next thing you know, you're just standing there sobbing, and everybody's clapping and saying, take your time, take your time. But, you know, this was not that occasion. So I thought, write something down. And I just, you know, fortunately, I just wanted to – we are Virginia Tech. And, yeah, we – you know, I just wanted to state what I would almost consider the obvious, that we're good people, and we're sorry, and this hurts, and it hurts all of us. But, you know – somehow we will embrace each other and go and continue this journey.
You know, what was amazing about it and kind of didn't strike me at the time, but when I listened to it again, that We Are Virginia Tech isn't just about the tragedy of that slaughter, but about all the slaughters of the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to always put it in perspective. It doesn't help any, but you always have to remember that you're not alone in your sadness. Because if you think it only is happening to me, you'll be – we're back to that young woman at Hadley. that in South Hadley, you will say, well, my life is over. This is it. And if you can say to yourself, but, you know, we're here in Appalachia where they take the tops off of mountains. So we had a young man, a child, an infant, be killed because a boulder hit the house. Now, can you imagine you hear boom, 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 and your child is smashed? You know, how do you make sense out of that? And you could no more make sense out of that than you could that Dr. Steger, whom I admire very, very greatly, is in his office right across from NARS, and he's hearing an and thinking, gosh, that sounds like gunfire. I mean, can you imagine the pain that you go through knowing that no matter what you do now, you know, you just, no matter how quickly you do it, it's already too late. And it's that kind of pain, and you have to put, I don't know, I mean, we've all had tragedies, mm-hmm. and you have to find a way to say, yes, I am sad. I'm a big fan of let's admit what's going on here. I'm sad. We are sad. But we share our sadness. We reach out also to others so that you're not just standing there alone being depressed and unhappy. You're trying to give comfort to those who also have had difficulties.
It almost feels like the purpose of sadness is to share it, just like with love or anything.
Well, more so probably, you know, having fallen in love recently.
And congratulations.
You can be in love by yourself and it works. You still look good. That's the truth. People don't realize that. You know, young people don't. I don't know how old you are, Anne. But, no, you can be in love with yourself. And you can be in love all by yourself. It works because, you know, you start to look better. You're drinking water now. Your skin is clear enough. You're exercising, you know. And, hey, if he doesn't notice you, the hell with him. You just go on and it's great.
Well, you're right. It is getting easier the older I get. I was thinking, I read the interview with Bill Moyers, and I was thinking about, you were talking about how poetry can address that grief, and it made me think of a book, and gal darn it, I did not write down the name of the book, but it's a book of poetry produced by the victims of the Chinese earthquake a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds so wonderful. I haven't gotten to it yet, but the idea of that and the expression of the grief through the poetry is really, if you are literate, if you have a language that you write in, is, or maybe just speak in, of course, there's the spoken, is a long time, I don't know if tradition's the right word, but human reaction.
I think that poetry is what we turn to when we're happy,
mm-hmm.
we do it. And it's like, okay, when we get married, we turn to poetry. When we are buried, our survivors turn to poetry. Poetry is that central. Poetry is the salt. You know, no matter what you're cooking, I'm a good cook, and I don't make as much of it as I used to. I love fudge. But, you know, if you're making fudge, you have to put salt in there, even though fudge is 99% sugar. If you don't sprinkle a little salt in there, you're not going to get those reactions. And I think poetry is exactly that.
We Are Virginia Tech is the last piece in your book, your collection of poems, Bicycles, Love Poems. It was published last year, but the paperback was just put out.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, just a month or so ago, it was issued. The book, it's called Bicycles, Love Poems. Why bicycles?
Because love requires trust and balance, and that is a bicycle. But this book started actually before it started, because my mom and my sister, mm-hmm. Both passed within 6 weeks of each other. So I went from being the baby in the family to being an elder. And then my Aunt Anne died, and that just left my Aunt Agnes and me. And so I was experiencing personal unhappiness, or sadness, I should say, when we had a young man, William Marver, shot McFarlane, who was a guide, security guard at the hospital. But he didn't shoot him, he murdered him, he killed him. And I thought, wow, that's really terrible. You know, I felt so sorry for his wife and his children, because nobody works that 12 to 6 shift unless they needed some money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so my heart was breaking for that. And then a couple of hours later, because that hit the news, and then a couple of hours later, he murdered a policeman, Sumter. So all of a sudden, Blacksburg, which I had moved my mother to, she's passed now, but, you know, I was so happy to be here in Blacksburg because you could, mommy was going deaf. She literally could leave her door open. People come in and out, you know, not a problem. And so it was spinning, Ann. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. This was just spinning. And I thought, what is going on? It's just, you know, things imagistically just spin. And I just couldn't shake it. And by the time I was trying to figure it out, like, wow, how do I take my sadness, put it to this sadness? And then we had the April 14th. And so this, too, began to spin. And I'm looking at it. And the one thing that I know is that you cannot make sense out of the senseless. If it doesn't make sense, it won't. And so there's no point. I'm not the little girl that's going to look at Criminal Minds. You know, I'm not going to take a course on, you know, let's understand how criminals think, because criminals could think they wouldn't be criminals. So I'm not, this is not me. You cannot make sense out of the senseless. But you can connect the dots and try to figure out how to direct that energy. And I thought, well, what's going to correct this level of sadness, something that started before, but these two events in a place that I love and that I have made my home. And the only thing that's going to connect them is love. And so I just said to myself, Nikki, write a love poem. And it was one of those, like, write a love poem. And I did. And I was turning 65. You know, it's only 65 poems in Bicycles, because I thought 65 for 65. And then it's like, Nikki, write another one. And I did. But the second one, particularly, and I'm not going to tell you how the order, because it's not the book is not in order, but the second one made me smile. And in making me smile, I went to a friend and said, oh, let me show you this. And he said, oh, I like that. And I said, do? And so one thing is going to start to lead to another. And I just kind of let my heart go. And about halfway through the book, as you can probably see if you've had a chance to look at the book,
absolutely,
I am just having fun. I mean, the book is just, it's just flying.
Well, I'm so
I realized, okay, I have connected these two wheels. But again, what do you do with it? Well, I needed a handle. And if the handle is going to be that, and it's a cliche, Anne, but love conquers all. So if I put that handle on these two senseless things that I have connected with love, I have a bicycle. Because one rides a bicycle through love and through balance and trust. That's exactly what you do.
Would you read something from Bicycles?
Oh, it's always a. It's always a pleasure to read from Bicycles. Well,
I've been listening to you now for several hours, and I don't want to stop. So, Bicycles, how about the title, poem on page 29?
Okay. Let me, I'm sorry, I have to flip it open.
No, no problem.
It's nice. Midnight poems are bicycles, taking us on safer journeys than jets, quicker journeys than walking, but never as beautiful a journey as my back touching you under the quilt. Midnight poems sing a sweet song saying everything is all right. Everything is here for us. I reach out to catch the laughter. The dog thinks I need a kiss. Bicycles move with the flow of the earth, like a cloud so quiet on the October sky, like licking ice cream from a cone, like knowing you will always be there. All day long I wait for sunset, the first star, the moonrise. I move to a midnight poem called You, propping against the dangers.
I love it. I love the line, I reach out to catch the laughter. The dog thinks I need a kiss, and you laughed, and so did I when I read that first.
Because I have this little dog, and she takes over the bed half the time. You have to.
Well, I have a big dog who does that, so... let's take a couple calls. My guest, of course, is Nikki Giovanni, the poet, the writer, the educator, and activist. She is a distinguished professor at Virginia Tech. And we just finished talking, hopefully, or hopefully maybe we'll never finish talking about that massacre at Virginia Tech. 614-292-8513, if you would like to speak to Nikki. And Bennett, you are on the air with Nikki Giovanni.
Hello, Dr. Giovanni. Thanks for your work today
and your
kind words. I'm also a firm believer in love and its ability to create and foster community. I wonder how I encounter so many times people that firmly deny that they're racist. I don't have a racist bone in my body or a classist bone or a sexist bone, and yet these people I see perpetuate an economic system, a social system that institutionalizes classism or racism or sexism. how can we, as concerned citizens, act in love and compassion to right those systems of injustice?
Oh, well, see, I'm not a politician, and what I do know is you can't join them, you know, and I do know that you can't pretend that they are all right, which is why Ann asked me earlier, why did I feel comfortable to, and I'm sure she didn't mean it like this, but as a black American, why did I feel comfortable to criticize Tiger Woods for the sex trade and to criticize Barack? Because I'm not a politician, and my job is to do what I believe needs to be done at that point. So I know you can't join it, and I know that my silence is incredibly important to everybody, not just me, Nikki. I mean, we who disagree are constantly being silenced, and so we have to speak up. We have to say that's insane. You know, we're here in Virginia. I live in Virginia. Bob McDonald declared April as Confederate History Month. Everybody needed to speak up on that one. That's ridiculous. First of all, April is Poetry Month, Bob. You know, don't you keep up. And go find 11 more.
Get a life, Bob.
get a new haircut. God, I wish this boy would get a hairdo. Don't you just get sick of that 50? It says so much about where you are. I bet he wears a class ring. You know? And you know something's wrong. You see somebody grown 20 years out of high school with a high school ring on, you go like, oh, my God, what a sad, sad life this is. So, you know, I think that that's what we do, and we live. If I may quote Gwendolyn Brooks, this is the urgency, live.
Well, I know that you may not see yourself as a politician, but as an artist and a mover in the world, I think that you have political power, and I think that we all do. And I really want to commend your work and ask you to continue for the good of us all.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Thanks for your call, Bennett. We'll get to more. We'll get to an email when we return. We'll take a break right now. My guest is Nikki Giovanni. Stay tuned to hear more. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support WOSU by bidding on unique culinary-themed packages online now. With the Chefs in the City Baker's Dozen, you can bid on 13 of the most sought-after Chefs in the City silent auction packages, even if you don't have a ticket to the event. Go to WOSU.org/chefs to view all 13 items up for bid. These great items will sell on the evening of April 15th. Proceeds from this and all of Chefs in the City 2010 events will directly support children's educational programming on WOSU. TV.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. In just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here. And the latest in national politics with NPR's political junkie, political editor Ken Rudin. He joins Ann in just about 20 minutes right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And you can hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/allsides. 55 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a slight chance of rain, and a high of 68. A few clouds tonight, a low of 42, sunshine on Wednesday, and a high of 73. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Nikki Giovanni. We're talking about the book Bicycles, Love Poems. It was just released in paperback. It was published last year, released in paperback about a month ago, and it's very easy to flip through, Nikki,
in
the paperback version. I'd like you to read more from that, but first let's take an email from Kelly. Kelly writes, given the opportunity, what would your guest specifically say to those of the angry conservative movement?
Get a life. God, those people are crazy. You know, they were down here at Virginia Tech protesting. We lost a student, Morgan. She got killed over in Richmond. It happens, you know. And we were, but again, she's a Hokie, and Virginia Tech family is sad. And, you know, that guy out in Kansas or something, that goes on, you know, God hates...
To the funerals?
Is that his name?
Well, no, he goes to those funerals for the...
Yeah, and screams at people, you know. And you have to... I mean, sometimes, you know, you just really worry about the people you're living with, because that's insane that you would actually come to the funeral, that this girl's mother is burying her child. And you're there with this, desire to show people that you can make the papers. I'm sure there must be a scrapbook someplace, but that's insane. I have no patience with insanity. You know, I have no way of dealing with that, because we were talking earlier. If it's the senseless, then there is no sense. And what can you do with that? I can't. I can't begin to make any sense out of it.
A lot of folks defend the angry conservatism, I guess, for lack, you know, just
I don't know. Barry Goldwater was a conservative. Let's break it for
well,
a minute.
Well, very
and,
different.
This is not conservative. This is two steps off a Nazi, and it's crazy. Because, you know, conservatives, there have been great conservatives, in fact, and they have helped keep a balance, as those of us on the liberal side also have helped to keep a balance. And we go into negotiations, we go into talking, we go into living together, and we find a way to make sense out of this and to find that balance. But what these people are doing, it's not about a conservative. They don't have a right to call themselves conservative. They're not conserving anything. They're destroying.
You can go to email at allsides@wosu.org to send us an email, or you can call us at 614-292-8513 to speak with Nikki Giovanni, author of her latest, his Bicycles, Love Poems. Nikki, how about reading another one?
Oh, well, this is one of my favorites.
Okay. Which one is it?
It's on page 67.
Okay.
Okay. Why don't you love me? I am good with dogs and children. Old people like me because I listen to their stories. I dress real sharp. My hair looks good, too. I exercise whenever I can. I smile every time I see you and say something terribly witty and clever. I just don't understand. I say jumbo when I answer my phone and when I hang up. I really, really, really don't know what more I can do.
And you do dress sharp.
I tell you, I had more fun writing that book. Laughter. I have a friend in Nashville, Tennessee. Her name is Frida. Frida was in the movement with us. And Frida says, you know, all the time, Frida says, laughter is jogging for your insides. And I think she is so right about that. But I had more fun writing this book. And people have been, you know, the feedback you get from a book like this. And people are saying, you know, I was just reading and then laughing. Then the book is successful. That's what it's supposed to make us do.
Oh, it makes me laugh. It makes me smile. one of my favorites of many was First Chair.
Yeah.
Do you mind reading that? That's just the next one in line.
It is. They say I'm too jazzy for First Chair. I bring something different and maybe something nice. But the orchestra is Baroque. I am gospel. It is Beethoven, I'm rhythm and blues. It's piano, and I'm honking sax. My problem is I make my own muffins, ice cream, and music. Not always the best, but always my best. I look good, and I dress well. I have I definitely have stage presence. I want to play.
Are you a musician?
No.
How did that occur to you then? Because it really clicked for me.
I have a friend who is.
And sometimes doesn't fit in.
No, he fits in okay.
Okay.
You know, First Chair is his favorite person, you
right.
know? And so it was just like, well, I'd like to be First Chair in your life. You know?
Okay.
I don't want to always be in the back. But then I'm understanding why I can't, you know, because I'm gospel and you're Baroque, you know. But it was just a fun way of approaching it.
614-292-8513 to speak with Nikki Giovanni. I was interested in all of your defense of hip hop, and it got me on another string of YouTube sound sensations, listening to the early hip hop, because I don't know if it was in the interview with Bill Moyers or something else, but you referred to the fact that really hip hop has been around for about 40 years.
Oh, it has been.
And so I went back.
Uh-huh.
I went through the history of hip hop, you know, on YouTube, and Tell me how it occurred to you to start a pretty very conscious effort to defend. And in fact, you have a wonderful, there's a wonderful book, Hip Hop Speaks to Children, a celebration of poetry with a beat.
Oh, yeah. No, we,
you wrote that.
I was I edited it, actually.
Okay.
But what has been happening is that people were picking on it. I was always a big fan of Tupac Shakur.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really never cared for the way people approach this young man. One, he's charismatic. He really wrote beautiful lyrics. But mostly, in talking to kids, the kids all liked him. So you're saying to yourself, okay, let me redo this. He did a shout-out for me when he was with Digital Underground. I never met Tupac, but I appreciated that. And I thought, you know, we need to do something about it. Well, of course, he was murdered, as you know. He shot down. And I was trying to find a way to say to the younger generation, you know, goodness, we mourn with you. Older people mourn with you. I mean, you know, I mourn with your generation. So I got a Thug Life tattoo. And I think the kids are like, oh, my God, she has a tattoo. I have a tattoo on my left arm. And so, I was going in. And back in 1972, I did what was then an album. It's now CD, of course. I did an album called Truth Is On Its Way. And it was spoken word with gospel music. And my producer's name is Carl Proctor, who was Aretha Franklin's first producer at Columbia Records. But Carl sent it in and said, you know, we want a Grammy. You know, we think Nicki should be nominated for a Grammy because the record company did that. And we got a letter back and said there is no spoken word with music. Doesn't exist. The category doesn't exist. And so, of course, 5 years later, it did. But nonetheless, I was one of the people doing what is going to become hip hop. I am a poet, so I have a limited ability in that area. I can't throw down at all. You know, if I was at a slam, I'd probably lose. But I've appreciated what the kids did, and I appreciated the way that they took a crossover and then they took it someplace else. So hip hop has been around a long time, but then it got to be fantasy because the nature of hip hop is public. It's a public art. It started up in the Bronx, you know, with the Sugar Hill Gang and stuff. And then it got into the studio. And the more it got into the studio, the crazier it got. And I thought, well, somebody needs to say something. And usually by the time you say somebody should, it should be you. And what I wanted to do with Hip Hop Speaks to Children was simply to point out that the roots of hip hop, of course, are opera, because opera takes place in public. It takes place in the square. All opera does. And it's always generally, not always, it's about gossip and how people relate to people, which is what hip-hop does. So it's just kind of wonderful to bring it back so that parents and grandparents could have a book that they could share with their kids, but that also maybe would help them to begin to see there's good and bad. Some of this stuff doesn't work. Nelly doesn't work, and some of your people will know exactly what I mean when I mention Nelly. But that was disgraceful. But you can't take away Queen Latifah. You can't take away, Badu. I mean, I'm a big fan of Erykah Badu, and I'm a big fan of Jay-Z. And when I started putting this book together, I don't know what you know about the hip-hop generation, but they are they're good business people, and they're expensive. And so they were very kind to me, and I think it's because they know I love them, that they were a very giving community to allow me to put this together.
Do you think that besides the bad that you mentioned, Nelly, and, you know, the criticisms of misogyny and that sort of thing and so much of the music or so much of the really, you know, the music you hear, do you think a lot of that's the same sort of disapproval that maybe grown-ups had, you know, back in the day for rock and roll and Elvis Presley and that sort of thing, or is it different?
Oh, I think it's essentially the same thing. There's always somebody complaining about something that you're doing, you know, and it's what the older generation does, and I think that that's foolish. You know, my grandmother, and I always point that out, my grandmother didn't like Billy Eckstein because Billy had a song, you know, he was a blues singer, he was a beautiful man, called Jelly, 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 Jelly Stays on My Mind, and to show that you cannot corrupt the innocent, you know, Mommy would be playing that, my mother and her sisters, and they'd be, you know, jelly, jelly, jelly. And I was thinking, like, wow, you know, where's the peanut butter or what is the problem here? And grandmother would just be having a fit. That trashy music, you need to get that trashy music off. I was old before I finally realized, oh, that's a metaphor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I could go on all day about songs. I had no idea what they were talking about.
Exactly.
But I like the tune and the beat.
Yeah, I was just sitting there listening to it. And it's like, oh, okay. you learn these things.
Yeah, it's part of growing up.
Yeah.
It's kind of like those animated films. I said they operate on two levels.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. I'm teaching a class this semester, writing for a young audience. And I said to my class early in the year, you see, it's all about sex. And they all looked at me like, Nikki, you can't say that. And a kiss for Little Bear, right? And Little Bear sends a picture to his grandmother. His grandmother sends a kiss back. And then in sending the kiss back, she gives it to the hen. Hen gets busy, gives it to the skunk. Ultimately, the skunk sees another little skunk and gives it to her. And then we get that wonderful line, she was very pretty. She gave it back. What are we talking here? And the skunks get married. You know, I mean, but it's that kind of. So we've been laughing with the kids. And I said, no, there's always a love story. There's always a love story. And so there's always a backstory, too. You can't be blatant. You know, this is not Prince. If Prince mm-hmm. were doing a kiss for Little Bear, it would. I couldn't even tell you what he would be saying because they would find you and you'd never be on the air again. But you know, you have to have it. There's always a love story, and that's what makes it work. Or there's always a broken heart, and that's what makes country and western. There's always a broken heart. You know, some people say it as a woman to blame, but it's my own damn fault. And when you're listening, that's what they're known for. So this is good.
You know, I love listening to your work against a backdrop of music. Of course, you know, you're a Grammy nominee. But I was listening last night. I thought I would like to listen to every poem with music.
It's fun. The music really does. I was listening to. This was the first time, you know, when you played We Are Virginia Tech, there was music. Somebody had put music to it
mm-hmm.
because that did not exist when I ended
up. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because you said you had YouTubed it.
Yeah,
I'm not internet-y, so there are things that I don't know. I've never YouTubed. I don't ever look myself up. And I have a website, and my web mistress is in Maine, actually, Holly Works. And She does, I think, an incredibly wonderful job, and it has to come down here to the woman who runs my calendar, and then it has to come through to me. So pretty much I don't see anything, and that works for me because you have to stay current, and you have to stay who you are. And if you let too much in, you know, that's the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, I don't know, about a generation that's really reading about vampires. If you let too much in, then pretty soon you don't know what's yours and what's somebody else's.
Interesting. We have a call. If you would like to speak with Nikki Giovanni, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is from Samantha. Samantha, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, hi, Nikki. All I have to say is you make me proud to be a female, and your wisdom is really great to listen to. So I appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and your joy is great. So as an artist, I'm just wondering, and a poet, what do you think of untrained poets? Because I know you're in academia. And do you know of any published, untrained, kind of natural gifted poets?
Oh, 90% of all writers. You know, we're here. I mean, I teach here and at the university,
mm-hmm.
but that's because I had a writing career before I came in. I'm fortunate in that I am a Fisk University graduate, but most of us really aren't. You know, you look at the World War II writers. You look at the poets now. You look at the really exciting work that's coming out of the inner city as well as the rural areas. I don't think it's about training. I think it's about just sucking it up and saying, okay, if it doesn't work, I'm going to cry for, you know, you put your however long you think you can cry, 2 days, 3 hours, or whatever it is you can handle, and then I'm going to suck it up and try it again. One of the things I really, really love, of course, is open mic, because at any Borders or Barnes & Noble, B&N, and I think that actually Starbucks should do a little bit more of it since it's become the mall of choice now, that people come in and read poetry. It's been a wonderful thing because you get to enjoy it. The the clubs, like in major cities, New York and Chicago, of course, Dallas, Miami, you know, Philadelphia. You have, and of course, all West Coast, you know, all the way from San Diego all the way up to Seattle, you know, the West Coast reads. And so it's, I think, get out there and enjoy it. Not that the East Coast doesn't. But everything on the West Coast is so performance-oriented.
Yeah.
And you see that. I mean, Hollywood predominates there. So it's a whole other thing. But, you know, if you're not having a group, start one. Go to the bookstore. You know, they're there. Go to the bookstore and say, you know, I'd like to have poetry reading on Wednesday night or, you know, whatever. And they're looking for programming. So the first couple of times, maybe nobody shows up. That would be normal. But then in order to volunteer, you know, you have to be consistent. So you have to be there and you have to be there on time and smile. You know, do not bitch about that. No, because people do that. And one person will show up, and then you'll be mad, like, nobody's here. No, that person is here.
That's so right.
You welcome that person, then the two of you, you know, then you build your numbers.
You're very perceptive, and I appreciate your time.
Good luck.
You too.
Thanks, Samantha.
Yeah.
Just real quick, Donald, we're running out of time, but I wanted to get you on. Hi, Donald.
How are you doing today? I was wondering if you were into any jazz, and in specific, have you ever heard of Herman Chittison?
No,
and I'll take your answer off there.
Okay, thanks, Donald.
Thanks. No, I am into jazz. My mother's a big jazz fan. I'm a big jazz fan. I'm an old Coltrane fan particularly. I always have John. And Ahmad Jamal is my favorite pianist. I don't know the person that you mentioned.
Okay. Well, we're just about running out of time. Nikki Giovanni, thank you so much for being with us. I want to remind everybody, her latest book, New York Times bestseller, Bicycles, Love Poems by Nikki Giovanni, is out now in paperback. Nikki read a few pieces, a few works from that. And if you want to hear that later, you can go to WOSU.org/allsides and listen to it all over again. Nikki will be at Ohio Wesleyan University this week. If you want to learn more about that, visit. Go to WOSU.org/allsides. We'll have a link there for you with more information. In the meantime, if you just want to stay tuned, we'll be back. Nikki, thank you so much today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
It was very much a pleasure. Thanks, and welcome back to Ohio.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.